Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th of November, Anno Domini 2015, and you, you lucky people, you survived Friday the 13th, and we are Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And as you hear, Steve is one step ahead of the law in the Midwest, but
again,
we are delighted to say that Dennis Worcester has joined us, and he's even brought progeny.
That's right. Yes, thank you, guys. I'm always happy to be here. Today well, I brought along my daughter, Jillian, who's checking us out for the first time. She's also helping us out by periscoping. So be sure to check out Periscope. Yes.
And Steve is not here, so we don't have any of that, but we'll Jillian is periscoping. I was going to start a blab, but I had to log on through the proxy server because... So students don't do that stuff. So I have to still sign in. I'll do blab in a minute. But the good news is the Soundbites website is back up and working 100%.
Hooray.
Enom finally unlocked, the system. And so, we moved it over to the new server. It unlocked the domain.
Okay.
So we moved it over to the new server and it's all set up and running. So today should run, quite, no, thank you. That was very loud. Moment. Now that should run just fine.
Super.
That better?
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
You had some news?
I do have news of the week.
I was trying to get you to think that you were having other voices in your head.
Oh, I always have other voices in my head.
Well, I was adding another whole audience.
I have tinnitus, which is that ringing in the ears.
Okay.
And so I tell my students, or anybody I'm giving a talk to, that they have to speak up to be heard over the voices in my head. So whatever your views are on Windows 10, many of us have upgraded our PCs by now, and it's a pretty likable OS. On Thursday, though, just over 3 months since its release, Microsoft has released Windows 10 first major update. The headline feature in the new update version of Windows 10, aka Build 1511, is that performance has been given a boost, although it doesn't specify by how much. It simply says that everyday tasks such as boot up times are now nearly 30% faster than Windows 7. The boot time has been one issue raised with the new OS, which has been slow on some systems depending on what you have installed. So the fact is that it's faster at all is good news. What isn't such good news is that it's a relatively hefty download. It takes about an hour to download and configure and install on a Core i7 laptop with an SSD over standard cable modem speeds.
I hope you don't have any data caps.
Exactly. Those of us with Greenlight Fiber downloaded it in moments.
Quit bragging, man.
Never.
I'm trying. You know what I thought of? I thought what I'm going to do.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I thought what I would do, you know those election signs that always showed up at the beginning of November or the end of October? I thought about getting one that just says Greenlight Networks and putting it in my yard.
There you go. You know, you can. They will send you door hangers and stuff to take around to your neighborhood and get people to sign up.
I'm desperately interested in doing that.
Yeah, you need to do that.
I'll put that on my list.
Right. Other significant changes include with Cortana, you can use your device's pen, assuming you have a touchscreen, to just scribble a note in the Cortana notebook, and Cortana will recognize the phone number, email address, even a physical address to help you set reminders. Cortana can also now keep track of your event and movie bookings, too, sending you helpful reminders to know where to go and how to get there on time, plus the option to book and track an Uber. That happened to me the other day, of course, with Google Now.
Goober.
I went and bought a couple of, we went to see The Importance of Being Earnest, the Fandango event.
Okay.
London West End stage play on the big screen. And I bought the tickets online. They sent me a confirmation. I went to put it in my Google Calendar and it was already there.
Oops.
No, that's great.
Well, Yeah, I've been. Apple's done something similar with iOS 9.
Yep.
They look at your calendar. They see when you have specified things to happen. And if you specify a location, it will send you a notification that says, oh, by the way, traffic is light.
Yep.
You could leave and be there. If you leave in the next 10 minutes, you'll be there on time and everything will be fine.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's a little creepy the first few times it happens. And after a while, you start to look for it. It's convenient.
Yeah, Google Now does the same thing. And it's very impressive. That in all of them, we're better than you. I'm saying is that all of them,
the state of the art,
have taken the fact that you're in their ecosystem means you should be able to do all this stuff.
Right. They know enough to be helpful.
Exactly.
Not just to be creepy.
Exactly. it's great. Anyway, Microsoft Edge's improved performance, calendar and photos, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff is better than it is. So I'm delighted to say it's the return of the poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you is Windows 10 gets a major update. And your choices are, woo, I'm convinced I'm upgrading. Oh, that's nice. And win what now? And so far, of course, because you are who you are, Win What Now is leading, followed by Oh, That's Nice, followed by Woohoo, and one person is actually convinced enough to upgrade now. And we've said from the beginning, you know, this is the, everybody should wait till the first service pack.
Yep. Yeah.
This is essentially it.
Yeah.
Right? It's 3 months in,
mm-hmm.
huge update. This is the first, this well, is the
we
service
Well, we've always touted that, you know, any new operating system out there, you can tell the pioneers because they have the arrows in the back.
Right.
And it's taken all those arrows in the back, you know, for folks to finally realize that, yes, this is the update, that now maybe things are okay. But I still, because I got in discussion with somebody else before on this, they still have to take the time.
Yep.
And go and check out the software that
yep.
they're running, the other applications,
sure.
whether it's PC Paint or, you know, any program.
Right.
Go over to that website and make sure that it's going to be compatible with Windows 10. Because that's been the biggest issue, too, is, oh, this program stopped working, or this won't do this, or that won't do that.
Right, and it's a big surprise to them.
Yeah, yep. because they all assume, and the first three letters in assume is what you might become
exactly.
if you don't take the time.
Right. Got to do that homework.
Yeah,
and in addition, don't forget to back up all your data. Nobody is guaranteeing that these upgrades will actually work.
Right.
So back up your data.
I was going to say, technology changes all the time. It doesn't always improve.
Right, exactly. So we also know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right-hand side, you will... come to under fascinating stuff, you will see the forums. And if you go to the forums themselves, the second forum is the poll discussion. And if you click on that, the very first thing is 14 November 15. Windows 10 gets a major update. We've got four people who've posted so far, or four posts, two people. And so we hope you'll join in the story there. And of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800. 7900415.
That's right.
We have been saying all along about how really we need people to wait, but I think the waiting is over. I think Windows 10 is as stable as it's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going to move now, you can move now.
Yeah, I think you can.
And it's still free, and you can still get the download.
Yep.
And you can still go actually download the ISO and burn a DVD and do all of that stuff.
The operating system is fine.
Yep.
But definitely still check out your applications.
Right. Absolutely do that.
Especially anything you're using to track your money or to keep track of your digital photos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those are the two big things that I would strongly encourage anybody to figure out. Other things like printer drivers might be important to check
yep.
out. Scanner
yep.
drivers. Those are usually the secondary things that tend to cause
trouble.
It's
all in what you do a lot of on your computer.
Right.
Yep.
So if you're using, say, Photoshop.
Yeah,
or any of these
but
other...
it's Photoshop version 4.
Yeah. Right,
you,
right.
You know, might... I mean, I'm just picking, you know, different
sure.
programs or
right.
a Quicken or whatever.
Yep.
You know, you've got to take the time and go check them out and make sure it says, oh, yeah, it'll work on Windows 10 too.
That's yep. great.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is our friend Linda from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda, what's up?
Hi, guys, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Good question. I remember a while back you said, you know, that you shouldn't turn your computer on and off. Okay, I use my computer a little, you know, some days I don't. I've been reading articles and they say, yes, you should leave it on. No, you shouldn't. I've got my computer on all the time. Is that safe?
Here's the deal on that, Linda. Here's the thing. When you turn, think of a light bulb.
Okay.
When does a light bulb blow? After it's been on for 5 or 6 hours or when you first turn it on? It's always when you first turn it on. And the reason for that is thermal shock. The bulb is cold. The light is cold. You throw electricity into it. It gets hot super fast. And that can, if the filament is weak, that'll make it blow. The same thing is true in your computer. So leaving it on all the time uses more electricity, certainly, but saves those components. Now, the opposite side of that, of course, is the hard drive. The hard drives are mechanical, and they're now spinning all the time. So what I suggest to people is, if you're like me and you're sitting at the computer for 15 hours a day anyway, don't bother to turn it on and off. Leave it on all the time. If you're a person who may not touch the computer for a couple of days, turn it off. It's the same thing that they say to people who are... I beg your pardon. It's the same thing they say to people about lights in a room. If you're going to leave the room for a couple of minutes, leave the light on. If you're going to leave the room for more than 15 minutes, turn the light off. So I think it's the same thing with computers. If you're going to be gone, if you're not going to use it for 2 days, turn it off. But if you're going to come back in a couple of hours, leave it on.
Okay. Well, the reason why I was asking is, excuse me.
Yep.
A friend of mine gave me something, and it really screwed up my computer. I went to the Geek Squad. I won't go into that, and he fixed it. Okay. But a couple of times when I go to turn it on, now it's a brand new computer. It's an all-in-one.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've had problems with it turning on. And I thought to myself, okay, and the Geek Squad, there's nothing wrong with it. So that's why I've left it. That's why I've left it on. I have got Webroot security systems. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, should I put something else on it if I'm going to leave it on all the time?
You should be running something in the background all the time. But I'll tell you what, if it has problems turning on and off, then leave it on all the time.
Okay.
It's a personal preference that people make, and you know.
Okay. I just wanted to know, you know, since the Geek Squad recommended Webroot security, you know, and I kind of like it. So by leaving my computer on, that is automatically doing what it has to do without me doing anything. Am I correct?
Yeah. If Webroot is on and running. Well, let me actually take a look here. Because some of them, it depends on whether or not you buy or just use it. With some of them, you have to run it by hand. With others, unless you buy it, right? If you just download it and don't pay for it, you can run it by hand, but it doesn't work all the time. And... but it looks like Webroot does indeed work all the time.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm okay then.
Yeah, you should be fine.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I thought to myself, it's been a couple of months since I've talked to these guys. You know, I got to call them and ask them. Sure. I keep forgetting, and then it's 2 o'clock. I said, I forgot to call them.
There you go.
It does happen.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thanks for giving us a call.
Yeah, thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Yeah, it's we're finding that not so much with the antivirus programs, but with a lot of the other ancillary programs, the spyware removers, things like that.
Sure.
They don't run in the background all the time unless you pay for them. You have to actually start them up and run them on your own.
Uh-huh.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites and the Truly Great. And solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I got the blab up, so I'm going to start recording it now.
Wait. The blab?
Yeah, we're on blab, blab.im.
Blab, 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 blab.
Tell me about blab.
Yeah.
Oh, blab is another thing like, you know, every other one of the hundreds of social media, video, blah, blah, blah things.
Sharing.
It's much like Periscope. A little bit like Hangouts and stuff like that.
Okay.
It's just a different one.
And what do you like about this one?
Because 8 or 10 people said you should try this out. The big thing is, if you go to blab.im, they actually tell you at the front page what's up now.
Okay.
So as opposed to on Periscope, it has to be someone who's following you.
Right.
Or on Hangouts, they have to know about it and go to the page or whatever.
Okay.
Here on Blab, if they just go to the front page, we'll be listed. And you can.
So
you
discoverability know, is far.
The
far
discoverability
easier.
Is pretty good. So
okay.
Right
especially
now, of course,
especially for people who may not already follow you.
Right. Pretty much right now, there isn't anybody following us except one person is indeed watching. So that's lovely.
Oh, well, that's a good start.
That's a good start.
You got to start somewhere.
And one is where you should be.
That's right.
To start as opposed to zero. Now, right now, the picture is only me because it's just my camera on my Chromebook. But there's Dennis. Come on in. That's Dennis. And Dave's over there somewhere. I'm not going to turn the whole computer around to show him. But so that's where we are. It's
okay.
On blab.im.
I'll check that out.
It seems that it didn't take. It left off the name of the show. It just says,
we'll figure
we're
it out.
Answering your computer questions on the air since 1989. All right, whatever. All right, so here's a new... I probably can't do that anymore. All right. highlighting crucial weaknesses in Apple's and Google's processes for admitting new titles into their competing app stores, both companies have ejected a third-party Instagram app after discovering it probably stole users' passwords and pictures.
Not cool.
InstaAgent, as the app was called, marketed itself as a program to track people who visited a user's Instagram account. It had between 100,000 and 500,000 downloads from Google's Play Store and was in the top charts of the iOS App Store. But behind the scenes, an app developer said earlier this week that the app sends users' Instagram login credentials to a server controlled by the InstaAgent developer. Google was the first to pull the app. Apple later followed. According to a blog post published Thursday by the iOS developer, a suspicious packet contained the Instagram username and password and was sent to Instagram.Zunamedia.com. Another fact is that the InstaAgent developer used the subdomain Instagram.Zunamedia.com to send the data that was exactly the same data that had been sent to the official Instagram servers to his server. About 24 hours after the researcher used the app, an image of advertising InstaAgent was posted without the researcher's permission to his Instagram account. In a recent post, the InstaAgent developer said passwords were never stored on unauthorized servers. That's little comfort to people who use the app and unwittingly sent their passwords over the internet. The larger issue, of course, is that neither Apple nor Google detected the suspicious behavior on their own when deciding whether to admit the app. And if a rogue app can obtain login credentials for Instagram, it's conceivable other apps can get passwords for much more sensitive services as well. It would be ideal if both Apple and Google said more about their vetting processes so users would have a better idea of how protected they are when downloading apps. In the meantime, security-conscious readers are advised to remain skeptical of both companies' vague assurances and install apps sparingly. So, do you worry about what apps are doing behind your back? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Amazing.
It's an amazing thing. I also just realized something about Blab. Because I don't have Steve's little eye rig.
Yeah.
I'm actually recording only what comes out of here, so we can't. So
no
it's
problem.
Not worthwhile anyway. So I'm going to stop the thing. I hate to say this, but
that's okay.
We're kind of done. I don't know how you exit this. I'll find that out in a minute. Wow. Okay. Whatever. All right. But yeah. So we've seen this from the beginning, of course. The app stores are great, and it's great that we have millions and millions of fun little apps in both stores. I'm just calling it the app store as a generic term. The problem becomes who vets this stuff.
Right.
Who do you trust? And we know for a fact that both Google and Apple get so many apps every day.
Well,
you
can't get people flooded with requests. And some of them, it's not easy because they've got a set of guidelines. Both companies, Google and Apple, have a set of guidelines that they really want to try and enforce. And for the most part, these are not all tested in an automated way. They're tested with automated tools, but they're tested with actual people. So you're limited by how many people can you put in chairs and show apps all day to, and how can they work through that? Some of the things that we're discovering are things that were not really declared as features that sort of happen in the background. Sometimes those are things that were malicious with malicious intent. Sometimes they aren't. But any time that you have humans involved, mistakes will be made. And that's the bottom line with just about all of these types of things.
Yep. Yep. And I don't know what to say about that. You know, it just is what it is. And you know, everybody expects there to be some form of magic when you're doing this stuff, but there isn't. There is no...
It's you can't talk about it in absolutes.
Right.
There's no such thing as absolute security.
Right. And there's no way that I know of to just magically write code that'll fix this every time, you know, that'll search every app that gets uploaded and magically say, oh.
Right. I'm sure it's the same way in the Google ecosphere. When you're an Apple iOS developer, one of the things you have to do is get an encryption key, and you get that when you become a developer in their program. So when you submit an app to be reviewed, you submit it signed with your key. And before it goes to the App Store, it's also something that Apple signs as well. And what that means is if Apple discovers that there is an app that's not behaving the way it ought to, Apple has the ability to essentially have a kill switch where they can say, nope, this app is not going to launch anymore. Even if you've got it installed on your iPad or your other iOS devices, it doesn't matter. It won't run or won't do what it's expected to do.
Right.
And Apple has done that so that they can keep better control over their platform.
Right. Right. So it is a tough problem. They're doing what they can. And let's throw Microsoft in there as well. I mean, there aren't a lot of people who are doing the Microsoft thing yet, but they're also in the mix. So you have to be personally wary,
right,
and careful. I am going to stop the recording, like I said, because we don't have the iDevice, so I can't hear the phone call. So I'm just going to stop and be done for today.
Okay.
I certainly hope that does it. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Rich. What's up?
Hello, guys. Good afternoon. Just want to interject that I did become a member or a continuing member a couple of weeks ago.
That's what we love to hear. Thank you, Rich.
Fantastic. And love listening to you guys and, of course, always get good answers to my questions.
Sure. Thank you. It's you people who keep us on the air, and we are grateful.
My question this week has to do with my wife's computer. When she goes on to using Firefox and signing on to Facebook, it gives her a message that I'm assuming is coming from Facebook saying that she has a malware problem and that you need to go to this spot to do the scan and everything else, and it won't go any farther or allow her to sign on to Facebook using Firefox. Now, that being said, we've gone to Internet Explorer and signs on without a problem whatsoever.
Hmm. Yeah, you've got a little bit of malware, some sort of...
Yeah, some type of malware contamination in the machine. And because Internet Explorer is too dumb to get out of its own darn way.
Well, also, it is possible that it's an add-on to Firefox,
mm-hmm.
right? That when you install something else, we often find that when you install something on your computer, it has tag-alongs, right? Okay. Programs that, you know, you get a free program. Well, how do they pay for that? One of the ways they do that is they get somebody else to foot the bill. And one mm-hmm. way to foot that bill is somebody else says, oh, you know, when you install this, we're going to put this toolbar on your machine or something else.
Okay.
So unless you carefully look at every screen and uncheck the things you really don't want, you often, when you download and install freeware,
right, you will get I'm extra aware stuff. Of that and make sure that I look at that kind of stuff.
Good. But definitely do not go to that site that
right,
they're suggesting
right.
to.
Right.
The products that we recommend off the Security Tango are safe ones that you can download, run, and they will usually take care of 99% of the issues.
Yeah, but now, here's what you should probably do.
Okay.
The first thing, of course, dance the Security Tango.
Okay.
But if it doesn't find much there, you may find that what's happened is something has installed an add-on to Firefox.
Right. Well, that's what I was thinking of, is maybe was Revo uninstalling Firefox and reinstalling it to see if that clears it up.
Yes, but before you make that extreme choice...
That's using a hammer to kill a fly.
Right.
Okay.
Before you make that extreme choice, what you might want to do is just open up your add-ons and see what your add-ons are.
Now, I've done that and don't see anything that's unusual.
Okay.
Shock stuff and things like that, that, you know, players and stuff like that, but nothing abnormally don't see in another computer.
Right. Have you tried disabling them all? Not uninstalling them necessarily.
No, I haven't necessarily tried that.
Yeah, try disabling them and rebooting.
Okay.
Reboot Firefox. See what happens. If the thing goes away, then you definitely know it's one of them, and now it's detective work.
Right.
Right.
Start each one at a time.
And then reboot, not reboot, but restart Firefox, see what happens.
Okay. Well, all right. I guess I got a little bit better place to start than, you know, like you said, going to the extreme of taking Firefox right out and then just reinstalling it.
And it may come down to that, but certainly try this first. But definitely dance the Security Tango as well, because it may be a worm in your actual machine as opposed to specifically in Firefox.
Now, that being said, too, I've also run, I'm running everything with Norton Antivirus and their stuff and everything else, and they've done full scans and everything else, and that hasn't found anything either.
Well, one of the things that we found that the virus writers do is they rarely these days release a virus that can't get around the big antivirus programs, Norton, McAfee.
They test against that before they ever release it in
the
wild.
Yeah, and really, there's not a lot of viruses. It's more malware.
Well, but still, it doesn't matter what name you give it. The point is that they will work around those things before they will release them. So using a different one as a backup, I'm not saying don't use it.
Right.
What I'm saying is you should download one of the free ones, you know, like Avast, and then once in a while, particularly when you find you have a problem like this, disable Norton, run Avast, and see what it finds on your machine.
Should I get one of the malware ones off of the Tango and run that also?
Well, I've already said you should run the whole Security Tango, so yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I wasn't sure if maybe just, you know, getting the malware one for, you know, time being just to try to solve this problem.
No, the problem is, as Dave said, there's all kinds of different designations,
mm-hmm.
and no one program gets everything. So, I've given up giving them names. They're just all malware now. If you call it a virus, great. If you, I don't care what you call it. The point is,
something's in the machine and causing you issues.
Right. And so you can't, you know, run all of the things that will get rid of stuff, and the chances are much better that you're going to hit the one that will take care of that.
Okay.
And again, if all else fails, Revo uninstall Firefox, install a fresh pack that you download from the website,
right,
and you're on your way.
Yep. All right. Well, great answers. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck.
Have a great week.
You too.
Thank you.
It's we've really gotten to the point where, you know, even the Security Tango is only adequate up to a certain point.
That's right.
Because it doesn't handle rootkits. That's not probably what Rich's issue is, of course.
No, I don't think so, especially since it seems to be browser-specific.
Right. But, you know, there are things that we just don't easily managed to get rid of, and it's sad, but it's...
They can nest themselves in there and be a pain in the butt sometimes to get out.
Right.
Yep.
Well, yeah, and you know, that's another reason why sometimes a full-fledged computer isn't always what's necessary,
right,
especially as a second machine or a machine that you use day-to-day casually, something like a tablet device or a what I'll call a laptop light, something like a Chromebook or some other tool. And we talked about this at the Apple Cider meeting on Wednesday, that just because you see a Chromebook doesn't mean that you have to have a laptop. There are, what was it called, a Chrome block?
Chrome box.
Oh, Chrome box, thank you, that you can plug your existing keyboard, mouse, monitor into, treat it like a full-fledged machine, and it's a little device that sits on the corner, and it doesn't speak the same language that tends to get infected with all of these troublesome annoyances.
Right. So far, at least, there are no viruses that hit Chromebooks.
Right.
So, you know, I'm recommending that for people who don't need the specific things that are in a, you know, like a Photoshop or whatever, that a Chromebook would be good. All right, listen, we got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, Nick Francesco. We have somebody on the line, and we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is us.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, it's the very professional sound bites. And we have...
I was off a line. I went to quick hit the, you know, the music to come in.
Right.
And I happened to hit a PSA.
Oh, there you go.
Oops.
I heard it kind of in the background there.
Yeah, even extra voices in your head.
Exactly.
No additional charge.
I had no idea it wasn't one of mine. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. Thank you very much for being on the air.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I have two Firefox issues.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first one is that on my laptop, it's an older laptop, so I'm running Ubuntu 14.04.
Yep, the long-term support one.
Right, and then on a desktop, I have the Ubuntu 12.04, which will upgrade up. The issue is that on my laptop, both machines, by the way, have the same version of Firefox.
Yep,
all right.
So on the laptop, I can go, I've listened to certain websites that have some music programs, but it won't play. But on the desktop, it does play. And then if I try different browsers, well, it will play. So can you give me some clue what I have to tweak in Firefox to get it to play on my laptop?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that are going on here. One is making sure you have the right codecs, that is to say the magic sauce that will allow a specific type of audio stream to play on your machine. You clearly have that because you can make it work in other players, in other browsers. So the next question becomes, why is Firefox not working specifically?
We're furiously Googling here.
We're Googling as we go. And the reason for that generally is the fact that the particular codec that you're using is not registered to Firefox.
Oh.
As to why.
Yeah.
Do you know what kind of audio you're expecting to play?
No, because it comes from PRX.org, Public Radio Exchange.
Okay.
.org, and so they have their own player, and I can access it both from PRX themselves as well as then from the person who makes this radio program. They have their own website and have the player on there.
Okay, and both of those times you're using that third-party player?
Yes, it is. You know, and as I say, it plays well on the Ubuntu long-term, the on the desktop, no problem with the Ubuntu, but here with the Lubuntu, it's not playing.
Hmm. Yeah, it may be that Lubuntu doesn't set it properly. One of the things you can try is in Firefox, through the tools and the options.
Yeah.
And applications, search for MP3 and see what it's set to. Do that on both machines and on the machine that it's not working.
Yeah, I've done that. I've gone ahead. I've got all the same extensions. I've got the same applications. I've gone in and checked that things are the same, and they are, and something it doesn't like it on the Lubuntu machine.
What about...
I'm sorry, let me break in before you ask that question. You said it was PRX.org?
Yes, publicradioexchange.org.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, Dennis.
I was going to ask, does the audio work with anything else beyond this third-party PRX player?
Oh, yeah, I can go ahead, can go to CNN, I can go to other websites I can hear the audio just fine. I go to YouTube, I've gone others, and it works fine.
Okay, so it seems to be strictly limited to the PRX tool.
Yes, it seems to be, and one other one, which I can't readily recall right now.
Okay.
That's all right. I'm at the site, and I'm not seeing anything really unusual
we're going to try and listen to an existing...
What's there? I'm not sure.
Yeah, if you want to, I could tell you the other website, the man who sets it up, because he puts his program into there, and I could tell you, when you go to his blog, he has the player on there. If you want to play with that one, too.
Sure.
It's hermitradio.com.
Okay.
It's stuck in the psychedelic era.
Oh, yes, it is. Holy moly.
Check out that site.
That's a flashback without the drugs. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
Okay, so, yeah, I see that it's there. And
so, Nick, with zero plugins related to this tool.
Yeah, and yet it's all working. Stuff. I'm not sure what I'm looking at.
Yeah, when I hit the little play button on both sites there, it flashes with the pause, and then it goes right back to the arrow. And you hit the either forward or fast forward or reverse, you get the flash of the pause, and it goes back to the arrow. I mean, it just won't take.
If you go to the station and you look up at the URL bar where you type in the website.
Yes.
Over on the right, do you see any little icons?
Take a look
at that when you go back to it.
Yeah.
And if there is one, click on it. Many times what you'll find is that the security settings in Firefox may be different from one of your machines to the other.
Okay.
And one of them is saying, like, don't run Flash or don't run whatever
is. Yeah, don't run whatever plugin
is
being requested.
Whereas you can then, from that plugin little icon, click it and you'll have a choice of never run this plugin, always run this plugin, ask when you run this plugin.
Okay. Or just run it this one time.
Right. And so that may be the solution to your problem. Unfortunately, without seeing your machine, it's hard to really tell exactly what's going on, but I would start there.
Okay, great. So let me quickly then, I'll do that. My second Firefox issue. He had a friend who was running a version of a long-term care version of Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
When it was updating, it updated. When she restarted it, it froze. It would not boot any further.
Yeah.
So I got a live CD of Linux, was able to rescue all of their documents, and as well as music, pictures, etc. And then the other thing I thought, because they were interested about maintaining their bookmarks, I said, okay, I went into their home folders, and I could find the Firefox and their identification.
Right.
Okay, so I grabbed that out. Now, the problem is that since I knew this was probably going to freeze up again if I reinstall the same version of that operating system, I went to the upgrade. It went to, which is like back then it was like a 12.04 version, so I got like a 14.04 version. I installed it.
Right.
Everything went down except when I put in the ID for the Firefox, no bookmarks. No, nothing was there. It was essentially, I took out the default, made it their default as it was, and nothing was there. So their bookmarks were essentially
not available for use. Is there any way you can do that? Or do you have to continually back up your bookmarks just in case?
Well, I always tell people back up their bookmarks. But generally, the bookmarks is its own separate file.
Okay.
And if you just back, like, you, it could be bookmarks. I think it's just bookmarks with a capital B and no extension on Firefox, I think. And if you back that up, and then when you do that new install, you replace that with the one you've backed up.
Yeah, I did that.
Then that should work. Now, that would bring back, because I've done that, that brings back your bookmarks, but it doesn't bring back your credentials.
Okay.
So you still have to re-log into websites.
Okay. Well, it didn't, I could not find any bookmarks. I had the whole ID put in. No bookmarks appeared. The only thing I could think of is that they had an older version of the Firefox, like it could have been Firefox 21, and now the new version was now running Firefox 32, and therefore there's an incompatibility between the two. Could that be the problem?
Yes, that's the other thing I was going to say. Because you went up a level. You copied the entire ID.
Yes, I did.
Had you only done the bookmark itself, that would have worked.
Oh, okay. But I couldn't recover that itself, I don't think.
You might want to take a close look at the at what you copied, because it should contain subfolders, one of which would have the bookmarks file.
Yeah, I did find that, and I hoped I could get that into the mix, but it didn't want to take. I think I'll just have to tell people, as well as for myself now learning from this, back up my bookmarks all the time, even while I'm doing other backups of my folders, you know, my data.
Yeah.
Make it a separate backup itself.
Backups are your friends. It's good to have a lot of them.
Yeah, and I also do my extensions, too, because I found out that doesn't work. The extensions don't work either if you take the ID. Then I have to keep a list of my extensions and reload them onto any new version.
Well, you know, of course, you can export your Firefox bookmarks.
Yes, I can. Yep.
And that's the thing you should do semi-regularly.
Yep.
And as for the add-ons, I don't remember if there's...
Yeah, there is a folder. There is a directory that says extensions. But, again, I think probably a compatibility issue might creep up.
Well, there's a backup extension called Phoebe.
Oh.
F-E-B-E, the Firefox Environment Backup Extension.
Interesting.
Oh. And it is from it is a standard Mozilla add-on for Firefox.
Okay.
What happens is you can back up your Firefox extensions, and then when you go to a new machine, of course the first extension you put on by hand is Phoebe, and then you point Phoebe at this file you've made, and it actually doesn't back them up. What it really does is rebuilds them using the installable.xpi files that Firefox normally uses, which means that even if there's an architecture change, it should work, because what it's really doing is just installing from scratch, but instead of you having to do it by hand, it does it from a list.
Magnificent.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
You've been very, very helpful, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Have fun.
Okay. Bye.
That Phoebe is really interesting.
Yeah, it really is. The whole idea behind all these extensions and everything is to customize Firefox into the way you want it to look and the things that you want it to do. But you're right. Unless you have some sort of handle on how to make that portable, it doesn't do you any good if you need to reinstall or whatever.
Sure.
Chrome has what it calls a sync capability, and that saves it all up to the cloud. So if you go to a different version of Firefox or even a different machine, you can say sync to my cloud stuff,
and
it'll
Chrome.
Bring everything back down.
Right.
Firefox doesn't have that sync to... Well, and of course, again, that's because you're on the Google ecosystem, and it saves in your Google Drive and blah, blah, blah.
It's an integrated environment
that they have set up for you. Firefox doesn't have that, so they've got an extension that does essentially the same thing.
Right.
I'm sure that Safari can do the same thing.
The iCloud services allow you to well, to allow you to do iCloud backup for keychain items and a number of other things. I don't know if they do Safari stuff. If you guys know that for sure, let us know.
Yeah.
But it's very helpful to have that synchronization, because then when you sit down at a new machine, or if you go and buy a new machine, then it all seems to work. With Apple stuff, they have a really fantastic tool that we talk about at work all the time called Migration Assistant that allows you to literally bring two computers into the same room, set one up and say, look, I need this one to send its stuff over to the other one. And when you're all finished, your new computer looks and behaves exactly like your old one did.
Nice.
It's really, really helpful. And nice. What you'd expect from a hardware company like Apple.
Right, exactly. Very nice. Very cool. Nice. But yeah, so now we have three solutions. There's the one for Apple, there's the one for Google
yep.
Stuff, and there's the one for Firefox specifically. So
yeah,
very nice. Very nice. We don't often explore the stuff that's available as add-ons.
That's true.
And we really should. One of the expectations when you have a Chromebook is that many of the things that you want to do, you can do as add-ons.
Right.
As extensions. So you really need to start exploring those. Listen, that music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But we know you're not particularly bright, so we're going to give you a chance to do it again. After a slightly longer break.
Don't insult the audience, Nick. It's just bad business.
They expect it of me now.
I'll get them during the commercial break, folks. You'll see.
But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and for some unknown reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great, and thanks to you, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
That's right.
And we have, but I seem to have walked off. There we go. Sam from West Henrietta on the line. Welcome, Sam. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I have a Windows 7. I got a Gateway hard drive. And a couple days ago, I wake up in the morning and the power light be blinking on and off. And then I reboot it. And then the only way it would stay on if I go to my control panel and keep it on for a couple hours. Well, now it's working okay. I'm just wondering, is there anything I can do to correct this, or is that just a fluke?
Did you have any of the, if you go into the control panel under any of the power saving settings, changed any of those to shut it down or put it into sleep mode?
No. On my when I hit the window button, and I go to where it says shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
I just hit restart.
Yeah. No. What I'm saying is, if you go to the start button, go into the control panel.
Okay.
Under the control panel is energy savings or power management, and check in there to see if any of the settings are set to time out and either shut off the screen or put the machine into sleep mode, which Windows really doesn't like, for the most part, going into sleep mode. That's where we tell folks, just go ahead and turn off the monitor. If you're going to leave the machine on, just turn the monitor off and leave it alone. And that goes back to Linda's original question, turning it on, turning it off. I leave mine on 24/7, and the only thing I do is turn off the monitors.
Okay, that's what I know.
Yeah,
okay.
And like I say, just go it somewhere, maybe one of the updates or who knows what, might have changed some of your energy or power management settings. Just say, make sure that they all say to do nothing or never to shut it down or spin down or go and sleep.
Okay, I'm in a control panel right now. I don't see about energy saver.
Well, check with power management.
Power management. System security network. I don't see power management.
Hmm.
I don't know what I'm looking for here. I mean, yeah, control panel. I guess systems and security.
Okay.
Network internet.
Up in the upper right, you'll want to change your listing to small icons.
I'm sorry, I'm listening.
In the upper right corner of the window?
It's called Power Options in Windows 7.
I don't have it here under these headings.
Yeah, under all your, you know, usually you see... like the fonts and the display manager and the printers. And
I think he's seen the categories instead of the icon view.
Yeah, check the icon view, and there is one there for Windows 7, which is called Power Options.
Okay, let me write that down.
Mm-hmm. But you'll see it in there under your control panel, under the control panel items. If you say show, say, small icons as opposed to showing it by names, it'll show all the icons, and one of them is the power options.
Oh, I see. Okay. And then what do I do now?
Go in there and make sure all the settings aren't set to timeout. You can control your power management settings. Hold on a minute here.
Okay.
Let's go into the sucker.
Yeah, this is a place where you adjust the settings for
how
the
machine is to
behave.
Yeah, you can sit there and say, choose what the buttons do or change your plan. Normally, it's a balance, and you can go in there and change your plan settings. And that's where you want to make sure that, again, nothing is set to a specific time to time out or do anything.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Give it a shot.
Try that.
All right.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
No problem. Yep. One of the challenges, I think one of the clues for me was when he said it was a gateway machine. And I don't know when the last time, how long has Gateway been out of business? I know they haven't had retail stores here in a decade or more.
Yeah.
But they may have had online business since then.
Yeah.
I wonder if it may have also potentially been some type of hardware issue.
Or it could have been a refurb machine that he got.
Oh, could have been. That's true.
Yeah. You know, I mean...
That was one thing I was going to ask him is how old the machine is. It just might be.
Could have been an original Windows 7 machine before Gateway went out of business. And
right.
I think it could be 7-8 years old.
Right. At which point, you know, there's not much that can be done about that.
No. Well, but again, it's just take the time to go in there and see it. And
right.
The holidays are coming up.
That's true.
And it's a great opportunity to start thinking because, you know, folks, sure as God made green apples. There's going to be some great deals out there on laptops, Chromebooks, tablets especially.
Sure.
Because tablets are the big thing right now.
Yep.
With Google and sharing stuff out on the cloud. And, you know, for the most part, a lot of folks can do it.
What's interesting is that both Apple and many of the other companies that make tablets are finding that they're not selling as many of them as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Apple in particular, the iPad has not sold as well in the last 6 months.
People are hanging on to the tablets that they used to have.
That's exactly right. They're either hanging on to the tablets that they used to have or they're buying some other type of device.
Right.
On the non-Apple side, they're buying a lot of Chromebooks. On the Apple side, they're buying a lot whatever
laptops,
is the
MacBook
less,
Air,
or, less expensive.
Yeah, the iPad mini.
Right.
And other tools. Yeah, those have been interesting because we're learning what the refresh cycle is. How long does it take before somebody says, you know what, maybe it's time for me to get a new one? A lot of the things that people have had with computers for years are, well, this computer started getting slow. And I use air quotes around slow because that means different
relative.
Things to different people.
Yep.
Right.
We see a lot of people who go visit a friend's house for the holidays and they just got a new machine and they're showing it off and then they go back to their own machine, and then I get a call and says, I think my computer's feeling really slow. And I say, did you go visit somebody else's computer who just got a new one? Sometimes it's relative that way.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing with iPads and tablets in general is that the performance in general stays pretty much the same. There aren't any moving parts inside. There aren't any hard drives that eventually don't read things as well as they used to and don't retry over and over, slowing down the experience. And because of that, the performance is adequate for a really long time. So until you get to a point where the App Store won't let you download and install an app you really care about,
right.
or or you run out of space because you've taken a bunch of pictures, we're seeing that, that tablets in general seem to have a perceived longer lifespan.
Well, the other thing we were talking about last week, and Windows 10, because how Windows 10, after that, it's just going to be Windows, and you're going to lease it.
Right.
Well, it's gotten to the point, well, matter of fact, Windows 7 and 8 is still going to be around for a good while yet.
Sure.
And it's like, I got to think it, you know what? I think I got to just keep my Windows 7 machine disconnected from the internet.
Okay.
Because for the few applications or things that I don't need the internet for that. Go get a Chromebook. Get a nice Chromebook that I can carry around the house or do whatever.
Right.
Tie that into the network or the internet. I don't have to go anywhere. Everything's up on the cloud anyways.
Right.
Wherever I go.
Right.
And my Windows 7 machine, it'll be sitting there for the other few things that I use when I need it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'm fine. And I don't have to worry about viruses or anything else.
Yeah.
And everything, right, for the most part, is free. I can do Google Docs out there. My photos.
Sure. You can put those in Google Photos.
I mean, Kathy, we just loaded up hers to the photos. I'm learning, you know.
Yep.
I mean, she thought, oh, I'm going to run out of space. All her photos were less than the 16 required per picture. So
they're all free.
I mean, she literally has hundreds of photos up there. And didn't use 1 kilobyte of space.
I have over 15,000 photographs in Google Chrome and in Google Photos. Plus about 15,000 documents in Google Docs. Out of my 15 gig, I am using 2. And that's because I've got a couple of fairly large PDFs up there that are textbooks that I use for class.
Yeah.
And so everything else is essentially nothing. Now, you know that Windows 7 is off mainstream support already.
Yep.
Right. So you won't get anything except high security updates.
Yeah, but and it won't be connected to the net.
So, yeah.
As long as it's not connected to the net.
No, I'm unplugging it. It's just going to sit there and do the one key program that I use a lot.
Okay.
And I don't need the internet for that.
Right. And one of the things that I hear, but only anecdotally, nobody's done a study of it yet, is that people don't like typing on a tablet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've owned every iPad that's been released. Well, except for this brand new one that just was available this week.
Right.
And one of the things I had to get used to very quickly was that you can't rest your fingers on the on-screen keyboard the same way you can on a physical keyboard,
right,
the same way that we've learned how to for decades and decades.
Right.
And it's something that you have to get used to. And I agree. For anything more than a couple of sentences, an external keyboard hooked up with Bluetooth is the way to go. But even more, what I'm doing now is I leave the Bluetooth keyboard at home and I hit the little microphone button. And I just dictate.
But what a lot of people are doing, on the other hand, is saying, you know what? This isn't working for me. I'm going to buy some small, low-end tablet with a netbook or whatever they call them these days with a keyboard.
Yeah.
So if you can, you know, for $150, for $200, what is an even low-end iPad cost?
You're looking at about $900.
Right. So for, you know, half that, a third that.
Yeah, really.
Sure.
I can get a nice 12-inch screen, a nice keyboard.
Chrome, yeah.
For
$400, you can get a 17-inch screen.
Right. And so they're finding that people aren't willing to spend additional dollars for whatever illusory benefits you get from a tablet. So, yeah, I get it. And it's not just iPads. It's all of them.
Yeah.
Everybody who makes a tablet is finding this. All right, listen, back to the phones. We're going to talk to Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon.
What's up? What can we do for you?
I just wanted to say that Gateway is still around. Gateway was bought out quite a few years ago by Acer.
Oh. Right. Now that you say that, right.
I have one I bought back in 2012. I bought it at Best Buy, and just want to let you know that they are still around, and they are still kicking.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I was not up to speed with those.
Yeah, they're very cool.
The other thing I wanted to say is there's another easy way that people can get to their power options. If they don't want to go into the control panel, all they have to do is right-click on their desktop, go to Personalize, At the very bottom on the right, there's the screensaver setting. You go there, and within that window at the very bottom on the left, there's power settings.
Okay. There you go. Thank
you. And it's a couple clicks away, no hunting and pecking, because it's all pretty easy. And that works.
That's great.
Also.
It's always good to know a new shortcut.
Yep, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, and I was wondering if anybody got bit by that Microsoft security patch this week, that KB3097877.
Yeah, that's one of my news stories. Yep. Yeah.
We're going to talk about that soon.
I got bit by that sucker, and one of my programs I use, it's a doc, Winstep Nexus.
Yeah.
It denied starting the software, and surprisingly enough, Microsoft had a fix out the next day.
Yep. Well, they had to.
I don't think that would have happened very quickly if it wasn't affecting Outlook.
Exactly.
We'll be sure to listen. We'll have a news story about that soon.
Okay. Yep. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was great.
In fact, while Dave gets the next call queued up,
I love it when callers call in and let me know what's going on. That makes it so much easier.
It's the best part of this show. It's my favorite part.
Yes. If you have corrections for us, please do call in.
And the number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And you can call in just like Paul did from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Hi. Good afternoon. I have always used Adobe Reader to read my PDFs.
Okay.
But recently I wanted to do some editing, and I don't like these online editors where you can upload your file and then they convert it at their site and then download it to you, because I don't like some of these files contain personal information, so I like doing it on my desktop.
Sure.
So I downloaded Nitro, which is a program you can download right for a free trial for a few weeks,
right,
and then work with it that way. But now I'm done with it. I'd like to go back to using Adobe Reader. So I went on my Start menu, went to Default Programs. I thought I'd see the Adobe Reader still there, so I could re-employ it. And it's gone from the Default menu. And I'm wondering why that happened, why it was removed, and how I can get it back.
Well, is it still in the list of programs?
No, it's not. That's just the problem. If I open up the Default Programs, there's a whole list of programs there, but Adobe Reader is not there anymore.
Is it still on your hard drive?
I have Adobe Reader. I can certainly launch it. I'm wondering, though, how to get it back as a default program rather than just having to launch it.
So that whenever you double-click on a PDF, it just opens with Adobe Reader.
It opens with Nitro, yes. Exactly.
Okay, so right now it's opening with Nitro, and you'd prefer that it didn't?
Right.
Oh, the default programs. Yeah. There we go. All right. And you're using Windows 7?
Yes.
Okay. For some reason, when you said default programs, and I thought of the list of programs that comes up when you hit the start button.
Right.
Oh, I see what you...
No.
Default
program
list within that menu. Yes.
Yeah. Basically, what you do is you right-click, and you open up an Explorer window, find a Windows Explorer window, not an Internet Explorer window. Clearly, Microsoft never had enough money to find somebody who could name two products two different things. In the Windows Explorer menu, find a PDF.
Yeah.
Right-click on the file.
Mm-hmm.
Select Open With.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then select Choose Default Program.
All right, that sounds easy enough.
Yep. At that point, it should give you a list of all the programs that know how to open PDF files.
But when you're working with one file, and normally it's open with one program, for in this instance, Adobe, and then you switch over to another program, shouldn't the original one still be in a list of default programs under that?
No, because only one program can be the default.
You're expecting that to be document-specific, and instead it's system-wide. It's a system-wide change. And
right.
Sometimes programs like Nitro during the install process will ask, would you like Nitro to be the default app for PDFs?
Yeah.
And depending upon what you choose, even if you might have missed it if it went by too quickly.
Yeah, again, we tend to blow past those questions, but we have to be very careful to see what we can see. All right, listen, we got to take a break.
Thanks, Paul.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, 21 minutes after the hour, and Jill, and Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we were just...
I'm not Steve Ray.
Did you actually almost say I'm Steve Ray?
I listen so often it cycles through.
27 years.
That's very funny,
actually. Steve is Steve. I'm still Dennis. I got all distracted. Nick is showing me pictures.
I'm glad we got that identity crisis settled. Whoa.
Nick had me all distracted.
That's very funny. I'm a distracting kind of guy. But that shows you how small it is. I'm showing them my wallet drone.
Yes, the drone is small. Yes.
Which is very, very tiny.
It is.
It's very cool. I will
it's
have to
It's
got to
be, a couple inches square.
Yeah, that's it. If an inch and change. Not much. Much at all.
Yeah, and some of these drones, like we were talking on the one break there, they're unbelievable nowadays.
Yeah. The capabilities.
Yeah. I'd love to be able to afford one of the full-size ones with a camera and everything else.
Even if we could just rent it. Just for,
there's an idea.
For a week or two. In the summer.
The other thing I saw, and I don't know what you guys saw. I saw them at the Jazz Fest, and then we were down at Brown's Race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know how you have your Segways?
Yeah.
And you got the handle lean on?
Yep.
They now have a smaller version.
Yep.
It looks like a skateboard with wheels on the side. You just lean a little
bit,
you just go this way or that way. They're like $900.
Yeah. Kids at RIT have them all over the place.
I've seen them.
They are so darn cool.
Yeah, they really are.
They're neat looking. I haven't had a chance to try one yet, but
yeah, they're very cool.
I'm looking forward to that.
I'm not.
No.
You know, all you have to do is lean forward just a little too much, and the next thing you know.
And this kid was giving this demonstration over Brown's Race, and I looked at wow. And how much do those go for? He goes, this one's about $1,200.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I've it is, you're paying for the battery life and everything else. But
and the gyroscopes and all the...
And it's like, wait a minute. This young kid, I mean, he could have been more than 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't have that kind of money later.
Yeah. If I had $1,200, I'd have bought a car.
Yeah. Well, I did.
Yeah, so did I, as a matter of fact. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Hi, Joe. What do you know?
Yeah. Good afternoon, fellas. I have a question about hardware, frankly. The last locally built computer I had, basically, after several years, got fried on the inside because it seemed, from what I was told, that there was too much heat buildup. And so I was wondering, basically, I'd like to get another desktop, but how much, space and fans, and how do I determine whether or not I have enough, air circulation through a unit to make sure it doesn't go beyond its capabilities?
Well, there are a couple of points here, Joe. First, the good news is that newer chips and newer chipsets put off a lot less heat than the old ones used to. You still want to have, you still want to have a couple of good size fit. It depends. Okay. It depends.
Start at the beginning.
You want a fan definitely in the front to suck the air in. And then usually two fans, along with the power supply, to suck it on out.
Right. So it's all about airflow. And not pulling air into the machine, but pushing it through the machine. So, for example, and it also depends on how much stuff you have in your machine. If you've got a very high-end processor and a very high-end video card and a very high-end audio card and two or three or four or five hard drives and blah, 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 you better have an awful lot of fans.
Yeah. As well as a good solid power supply.
A good solid power supply.
Handle all of that, those requests for power.
Right. But for example, with my desktop, I have a fan in the front, two fans in the back, the fan and the power supply. Those all pull air into the machine. Into the machine. And then I have two fans on the top of the case that push air out of the machine.
In the back, the power supply usually blows it out.
Not this one.
That's unusual because I was just saying most power supplies.
I get that, but that's the way this one. Was built.
If you want a lot of open space inside the machine. Other thing you want, and I've seen this going to clients' homes from time to time. The number one way to embarrass a woman when you go to their home during the day is to open up their machine and have a lot of dust on the inside. They immediately say, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe it," because It's just not something that, they don't, that generally yeah, dust particularly gets dusted.
You have animals, and it's not or just, if you smoke.
Yeah. Mm. Well, sure. Ugh. Yeah. This the tar and the cigarette smoke makes things sticky. Yeah. And then dust likes to stick to them. And the more dust you get, it's like having a fleece blanket over the inside of your computer.
It's a huge mm-hmm. insulator.
And computers hate heat. And mm-hmm. hard drives with spinning platters hate heat even more because heat mm-hmm. kills magnetism.
Also, if you have a machine, don't push it back in the corner because then there's no airflow.
Or put it in a cabinet drawer. You know how that has some of these computers desk? And, oh, there's this nice little side compartment next to the desk. And they slide it in there. And there's just a slot in the back, maybe 2 to 3 inches high in about the length of the cabinet itself to let, you know, cords in there. Yep. They think, oh, that's good enough for the airflow. Oh, no, it's not.
No,
that's
really
like
isn't.
Baking it right there in the cabinet.
Right.
Yeah, I can understand that. But my next follow-on question is, are the new all-in-one processors, all-in-one computers, a better solution, or do they have the same issue but in a different way?
Well, they have the same issue, of course, but they're different in that they're all sitting open on the desktop.
Yeah.
So there's lots and lots of airflow around them.
Right. The You're whole not setting thing, it on your carpet.
Think of it as a huge antenna. You know, how an antenna, you know, you just have it out and it can pull in. Well, having this unit out, it can dissipate the heat faster.
Right. Most Macintoshes don't have any fans in them at all. Steve Jobs hated fans. but so they get warm, but if you tip them up a little, or if it's one of the all-in-one desktops, they don't get as hot because there's lots of airflow around them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were to stick them in a cabinet, so like they do with TVs, so that all you saw was the front of the screen, you might be able to overheat it.
Yep.
Yeah. Apple still has fans in most of their machines, but they are using a lot of aluminum. And the thing about aluminum is that it radiates heat really, really well to the room temperature. So it's easy for them to keep that air and heat moving where it needs to go.
Right. Also pay attention to how close you put it to heaters.
Mm-hmm.
Also pay attention to how close you put it to windows. Because not necessarily open, closed windows, because in the summer, the sun beats down on that box, and the heat's got nowhere to go.
But in general,
so the older ones aren't necessarily less of a machine in terms of reliability and everything else.
No, they're fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Many of them are actually high-end, so that's not something to worry about. So the big point, as we say, about heat is to make sure that it's got some place to go.
Yeah, you don't want to contain it.
You know, I think I've got an answer here, so I appreciate your time.
There you go. Thanks, Joe.
And take care, folks.
Okay.
Have fun.
Bye, Joe.
Yeah, we have seen over the years computers just basically commit suicide. You stick them in a corner of underneath a desk.
On the shag carpet.
On the shag carpet in the corner of the room. They don't have enough airflow.
With
they
a
don't
dog
have enough
or three.
Fans. You've got dogs. This is my problem. I had two now. Sadly, I only have one. Dog and a cat. And they shed. And so every once in a while, you got to open up the computer and
get some compressed air.
Right.
The little cans of air that you can get at any office supply
store.
Well,
you have to be careful with those, too.
And you open one up and you find a dead mouse in it?
Yeah. No. Not the cans, the computers.
Yeah, that's what I did one time because they had taken some cards out of the back and didn't put, you know, those little covers in there. So I go to pull the computer out and, of course, it was quite dusty inside. I mean, you could pull it out by a handful. And as I'm moving around, all of a sudden, I hit this little lump.
Yeah.
And I kind of move it, and sure enough, there was a little mouse dead.
Oh, fun.
Oh, yeah.
it
was looking for a nice, warm place to be.
Yes. You know, we were talking before, you know, talk about writing a book.
Yeah.
About our experiences in the computer world. You know, over 20 years for me, going to people's homes and businesses and all that other stuff, and some of the stories.
Well, people don't think of the computer as
it's an appliance like a toaster, right?
Exactly. Don't think of it as a delicate electronic device.
They don't think that you might have to, you know, empty that crumb tray once in a while.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up?
I just want to find out a couple things.
On the driver thing and CDs they have for updating.
Yeah.
Are they any good? Because a lot of the sites put send you know off to a driver update company.
Yep, getting your updates for your drivers from the company itself is always the best place to get them. The ones that you get on the CD that come in the box with whatever product you bought are whatever are only as new as when the CD was made.
Right.
And
okay.
Drivers will change fairly frequently, sometimes once or twice
well,
a year.
This is about this is about 3 or 4 different companies. Their cost is around $29.50 or something like that.
Hmm.
To get it to update your drivers.
They're charging you at the very least for convenience.
Right.
Right.
But I'm always wary of third party driver sets because, again, who do you trust? Right. You don't know what they've done, what they've put in there. My suggestion is invariably that you update, as Dennis just said, you update solely from the manufacturer of that particular product and get your updates from that company. Yeah, it takes a little longer, but now you're more secure.
Yeah, well, I understand that because most of the sites like AVG or not, some of the other sites, they have when you turn on the link for updates, they send you to another.
Exactly.
Okay, and the other thing I got, what happened to me this past week was I had my machine on, and I seen this, it said AVG Safeguard Toolbar.
Okay.
I let it go on because I have an AVG CD thing for the machine.
Right.
But come to find out it was a virus.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a browser hijacker.
Yes, a browser hijacker and other things.
That's right.
Yep. The problem is you will often see that these things say they come from a legitimate place. And
they're
just because it says AVG doesn't mean it is AVG.
Yeah, right. Well, I got super spyware, and I've turned that right on, and it caught it right away.
Okay.
Oh, well, excellent. Good.
Good. Well, it's good that it found that for you.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to find out what. And thank you, good Dave, for putting my machine together many years ago.
No problem. Glad it's holding up for you.
I got a new one now, but the other one worked for many years.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That's the idea. Yeah. When you get a good product put together by good people, you get good stuff.
That's for sure.
There you go.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Right. Bye-bye. Right. Yeah. Let's just mention this again in case we sort of alighted over it and we shouldn't have. Just because a product gets advertised on your computer doesn't mean it's a good product.
Yeah, exactly.
And just because it picks the name of a legitimate product doesn't mean it comes from that legitimate product.
Right.
So the AVG Safeguard Toolbar not only is not actually from AVG, but is in fact a virus. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Wurster, who is not Steve Ray, Dave Enright, Jill, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Wurster.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We had an off-air question.
Yes, that's right.
about how to do math equations, I'm assuming.
Right, like algebra.
Like algebra on Google Docs.
Yes.
Because you're using a Chromebook. Well, directly it's not particularly easy, but if you go under tool, if you go under add-ons, if you open up a Google Doc and you go to add-ons and get add-ons, and then in the search bar you type equations, you'll see, if you spell it right, of course, you have to actually be able to type and spell. If you do that, you'll see a half a dozen different programs that are formula editors.
Okay.
So, for example, there's one called, shockingly, Formula Editor. And if you click on them, you'll see what they look like and what they can do find one that you like. Of course, they're free, so you can add two or three in there and just pick the one, try them all, pick the one you like.
That sounds good.
And then add that in, and from then on, every time you need to do a formula, you can do it right in that particular add-on, and then just drop it right into your document. So,
wow, that's a great way to go.
It pretty much makes it easy.
Well, I had an interesting thing happen at work recently, and I will not name any names, but we had somebody who was coming down. They had a new iMac, and it had a wireless mouse, and the mouse batteries had died, and we replaced the mouse batteries, and then she brought it back down and said, my mouse won't click anymore, and I don't know what to do about it. This is really, really frustrating. She set it down on my desk, and proceeded to tap the end of it, the place where you'd typically click, and the mouse literally wasn't making any sound anymore. It didn't click. And she was very frustrated and wanted to know what we were going to do about it. So I looked at what she was doing, and the thing about the Apple mice is that they look great in a photo shoot. They're very, very pretty. But they are also very symmetrical.
Yep. I know exactly where you're going.
So I looked and saw what she did, squinted my eyes, and said, And then I quickly rotated it 180 degrees. I said, here, try click on this end. Click, click, click.
Yeah.
Which I did with my finger. And she was much, much happier.
There you
took
go.
It upstairs, and the day was saved.
The day was saved. I had a similar experience back in the old days, the Spark desktops, the Sun desktops,
machines?
Yeah, the Sun machines.
Or the SGI?
The Sun machines had a grid pattern on the mouse pad.
On the mouse pad, right.
So that,
it was like mirrored, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, the problem was a friend of mine came to me and said, you got to come to my house and help me. My mouse is insane. I can't make it work right. So I get there and I move it around, and indeed, it's just going crazy. I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I realized I rotated the mouse pad 90 degrees. Because the grid was not symmetrical.
Uh-huh.
And it worked just great. So yeah. that worked out fine.
Sun,
all right.
Sun had optical mice way, way ahead of the general public.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What can we do for you?
Oh, yeah, I have a question for you. On the Internet Explorer versus the Google Chrome, I read your column about the videos. Like on a website, if you're looking at a news clip or something.
Yeah.
Do those run on different programs, the two different ones? You said something about the Flash.
Well, here's the thing. Adobe Flash has been for many years the standard for when you want to put video on a website. The problem is Adobe Flash is so full of holes, nobody ever should run it ever, ever.
Yeah, well, how does the video run on the Internet Explorer?
Well, it runs under Flash.
And how about on the Chrome?
Chrome has written essentially their own version of Flash.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't have any of the holes that regular Flash has.
So if I watch a video, like off of a website on Chrome, it automatically is on the proper program?
Yes, it uses its own internal version of Flash. Of course, it's not called Flash. It isn't Flash,
but
you know what I'm saying.
Do any Flash settings or anything.
No, well, what'll happen is it'll come up as a blank screen, and then you have to right-click on it and say, play this video.
Oh, and
in Chrome.
Because if I'm on CNN website and I just play a video, it just plays.
Because it's now a setting. You can decide whether or not to autoplay video. I turn mine off. Most people don't.
Right.
So, yeah. So it should play fine.
I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything at all. It'll use the internal version of Flash.
Yeah, because the videos seem to run smoother on the Chrome versus the Internet Explorer.
Well, and that's the other thing, which is that the people at Google are using very, very clean, very new software to write their code.
Uh-huh.
And Adobe is still kind of mired in the 20th century with their legacy code.
So anything on the Explorer, it works with the Flash, which
right.
is not so good.
Right, exactly right.
Oh, okay, so then I'll just continue. I use both browsers, but I'm trying to get more into the Chrome.
Yeah, I think you should. We all know, in fact, Microsoft has abandoned Internet Explorer. Their new browser is called Edge.
Uh-huh.
It's not great yet, but I'm sure it will be. But right now, the best browser out there for the general public really is Chrome. And we see that, you know, when somebody goes to a website, you know what the website knows what browser came there. And we're finding that Chrome is well over 50% of every hit on the Internet. So
okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that.
There you go.
Thank you, James.
Thanks.
There you go. Yeah. People should never be using Flash again. Not ever. I've been saying that for years, but the problem, of course, is that there is so much Flash code out there.
Right.
Even YouTube isn't using Flash anymore.
No,
they've all gone to... All the new stuff is HTML5.
HTML5 handles video in a far easier way. Now, when YouTube first came on the scene, Flash was a necessity, as it was for many other sites at the time.
Exactly.
But we're finding that Flash content, in addition to the plugin having many, many security holes, we update Flash all the time where I work. You know, it's common to be updating it twice a month, if not more often.
Yep.
And what we're seeing is most of our big players have gotten away from using that tool and are now using HTML5, which is a standard. It's a universal standard that any browser can incorporate.
And I feel bad for the people who have spent, you know, decades learning and using Flash and creating videos with them.
Sure.
Because
or
that
animations
knowledge is theoretically obsolete.
Well, it is, but in this industry,
that happens.
Things change.
Exactly.
You know? There's only so much you can do. If you want to learn something that's going to be around forever, maybe learn some C. And
people ask me all the time, if I'm going to make money as a programmer, what language should I learn? I say there are two, Fortran and COBOL.
Okay. And everything is...
People still use those.
Fortran, they do, COBOL.
And they pay really well because...
They pay really well
because
there's
supply
so
and demand.
Few of them.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you really want to be a pro, you'll never be a glamorous programmer,
right. No.
And you'll spend all day being a head down code monkey.
Yeah, top down.
But
code.
You will get paid.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
you
not like PHP where it's right. the other thing where you've got way too many people.
Well, right, everybody knows PHP.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's just like PL1. That was another one that I got called back at Kodak.
Right.
Because you know that's what they used. But yeah,
JCL, the job control language. I actually got a call from a headhunter the other day. I understand you know JCL.
Mm-hmm.
I knew JCL
right.
35 years ago. I probably couldn't do it now with a gun to my head. But you know, if you kept up that skill, there's a job out there, and they're paying real well because they can't find anybody.
Well, once I got on the roll with PL1, of course, first I had to take assembler for my degree.
Sure. Right.
Then I went to PL1, and then I saw COBOL and Fortran. How hard can these be?
Right.
And they weren't.
They're
they
not.
Weren't. Once you learn top-down language
right.
and the structures
right.
and doing the procedures and that type of stuff.
Right.
It's,
and that's part of the secret. And COBOL and Fortran are picky, Fortran more so, I think, in the way you have to do things.
Oh, structure. Yes,
structure.
It has to be, yes.
But they're not hard languages.
No. Once you can get your head around it and think that way.
Right. Right,
that it's got to go this, and this. Because you can write some code sometimes, and if you don't follow those steps, like you said, it is very particular,
yep.
and it's got to be precisely that way, or the code won't compile, it won't run, it'll keep spitting out errors, and you'll be beating your head.
And you can buy Fortran compilers, or you can get free Fortran compilers if you're running Linux,
yeah,
and COBOL compilers as well. and really learn them.
20 years ago that
yeah
for me.
But you know what?
Time flies.
It's money in the bank.
Oh yeah, it was fun. I don't regret all my programming classes. I mean, I'd come home, you know, and be given the assignment. All right, you got to build this program to do this.
Right.
I'd start right away. Start laying it out. Start thinking about the code and everything else. And I couldn't shut my brain down.
Yep.
And you even go to bed and you're still thinking, well, I could do this and I could do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then your great ideas come to you in the shower.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, right. But, you know, what we see a lot now, of course, are people who are cowboy programmers.
Sure.
They just want to sit down and start writing code.
True.
As opposed
to... you need to understand some fundamentals first.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you need to lay out your program before you can do that. Well, that music tells us that you have wasted 2 solid hours of your life with this nonsense. You'll get to do it again the next week, but we're done for this week. I really want to thank Dennis Worster for stepping in for Steve Ray. I want to thank Jill Worster for being our Periscoper. Well done.
Thank you.
I want to thank Dave Enright for not swearing on the air. I want to thank myself for having showed up. Now, listen, don't go away because George is here to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. But we're out of here. We will see you in just 166 hours on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.